You're listening to The Moment, an interview podcast series on life. We interview and capture conversations with creative minds, thought leaders, disruptors, and the people that are doing what they love while challenging the status quo. You can find the show notes on our website, themomenthq.com, and follow us on Instagram and Facebook. But for now, let's dive into The Moment. Welcome to another episode of the Moment HQ podcast, Uncovering Your Life-Changing Moments. I'm your host, Monica Cade. Our guest today is Dion Taylor, owner and founder of Polkadot PR. As an ex-journalist, Dion set up Polkadot almost 10 and a half years ago with a pocket full of change and a lot of ambition. Today, Polkadot PR is a public relations agency with an expert team of employees who are multi-skilled across all media platforms. Now, one day, her life almost came to a halt. She was walking home after having a few drinks and dinner with some friends. She was an asthmatic, so she needed to take her Ventolin. So she took out her Ventolin and took one large inhale and suddenly found herself choking. She couldn't breathe. Something was stuck in her throat. She prepared herself mentally that this was it. So obviously Dion's life-changing moment is rather breathtaking, and no pun intended, and I'd like to welcome her to tell us how this experience changed her life. Hi Dion, welcome to the show.
Hi Monica, thanks so much for having me. You're absolutely right, it was breathtaking. I had a bit of a chuckle when you said that. I thought that's very clever journalism.
So thank you. Thanks for that. Yeah. So tell us more about this moment, because it was obviously pretty confronting and so sudden.
Yeah, I think that there was a lot of clarity in that moment. I think that's more important that's really what I drew on out of what happened to me. So basically what was happening was exactly as you said, I am asthmatic. It's not terrible, my asthma, but when a cold wind catches me or I feel like I need some relief, I just grab my Ventolin, which is always in my handbag. Mm-hmm. And what had happened on this occasion was it was quite late at night. It was about 11 p.m. at night and I was walking home, living in Rush Cutters Bay. Mm-hmm. And I was alone, and on my way down the main road, I passed a guy and three girls who were also on their way home, I assumed. And I'd said, excuse me, and walked past them and kept on walking, really wanted to get back because it was quite late. And on my way home, I called my then boyfriend, who's my now husband. His name's Danny. We lived a few minutes apart from each other and we hadn't seen each other the whole day. So I said to him, hi, what are you doing? Or nothing. I said, well, do you want to come over? Which I know sounds like total booty call, but wasn't. It was just how we ran things. Yeah. And I said, come over. He said, yep, cool, I'll be there in 10 minutes. I said, great. So anyway, I ended up walking home and walking into my street. And just before, my cousin who I was out with on the night, she had said to me, just call me when you get home. I need to know that you're okay. So I said, sure. So I called her and I was like, I'm home, it's all good. But I actually wasn't. I was still walking home. I then thought, oh, let me just take my Ventolin, and took my puffer out of my bag. And I don't know if anyone is listening who's asthmatic or has seen a Ventolin puffer, but it's this blue, like L-shaped puffer. And at the base of it is a cap. And that cap serves absolutely no purpose other than to prevent things from going inside the inhaler. So usually when you have your inhaler, and if you lose your cap, your inhaler functions perfectly without the cap. So I had in my handbag a inhaler without the cap on it, and I took it out, one spray, and as I, like, you have to deeply inhale through your chest, not, like, it sounds weird, but not through your mouth, but mm-hmm. not through your mouth, more through your chest. And as I did, this like rock got stuck, wedged in my windpipe. Basically, I stopped breathing. And in that moment, what happened to me was, as I mentioned, you get a lot of clarity, was the thoughts of, oh my gosh, I can't breathe. Yeah. This is not okay. What am I going to do? How am I going to get it out? Can I cough? Can I swallow? I realized there was no way to dislodge what was stuck in my throat. Mm-hmm. Then I thought, well, I've just started my business. I mean, my business was only 3 months old and I was still working from home at the time alone. do I really want this to be the end of my life? And I knew that my husband was coming, who was my boyfriend then, Danny, was coming over to my house, and do I want him to find me lying dead in the road when he gets there? No, I don't. And then I thought, okay, well, I think this is it. So I realized if I was going to die, I don't want to die from standing up and falling down. In case someone were to find me, I would have less of a head injury if I was sitting down. So I had such clarity and such like pragmatic thinking.
Yeah, I know.
Such a distressful moment. And I sat down and I thought, well, I'm just going to sit down and I'm just going to like try and meditate and try and like go through this experience in a non-panicked way, because I had panicked.
Yeah.
I thought, I'm just going to sit there and just try and be very, very calm. So I sat down and then I thought, oh my God, nah. This is not how it ends. Like, how dare this happen? I was 23 at the time. It was not fair to my family. It was not fair to me to just end my life for one stupid reason. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to try and get some help. And I stood up. And as I stood up, I thought, I'm just going to run to the main road. Because by now I was in my my street, and my street was this tiny little street. And there's like no foot traffic there. So I thought, I'm just going to run to the main road. So I ran to the main road with what strength, I don't know. Because like by this point, it was probably like a minute to 2 minutes of not breathing.
Okay.
And I mean, I think that's what I would imagine. I actually spoke with a doctor afterwards. I got checked out and I said, how long until like you completely lose consciousness? He said, after 2 minutes. So I was still conscious at this point. So I can only guess that it was around that point. And yes, it felt like forever. Mm-hmm. So anyway, I was running to the corner, and that guy and three girls that I bumped into on my way down, we bumped into each other. They were coming around the corner. I was coming around the corner and I was like gesturing that I could not breathe.
Yeah.
And this guy, who was like quite a big, strong guy, grabbed me from my waist and, like you see in the movies with the Heimlich maneuver, properly did the Heimlich maneuver on me.
Wow.
And out came flying this object, which I'll tell you about in a second. And then, of course, I was sick and I had to get my breath back. I was completely shaky. I collapsed from, I think, just probably adrenaline and relief. At that time, Danny had pulled into the street, seen me with these people. He was like, what the hell has gone on here? I just spoke to you 5 minutes ago. You were fine. Yeah. And who are these people? What had actually happened and what had come flying out of my mouth was, just sounds ridiculous, a pom-pom. A few weeks before, I had purchased a pair of just like cheap little ballet flat shoes, and on them as a decoration was a pom-pom. Mm-hmm. And a few days before that, I was walking around wearing the shoes, and the one pom-pom had fallen off the shoe, and I'm like a complete perfectionist. I could not walk around with one pom-pom mm-hmm. fallen off and the other pom-pom on. So I ripped the other one off and chucked it in my handbag, and because I didn't have a lid, that pom-pom, which at the center of it was a rock probably the size of like a 10 cent coin, mm-hmm. had found its way to wedge inside this Ventolin inhaler, and that is what was obstructing my breathing. So thankfully I was saved by complete strangers, and I just, you know, I was struggling to talk for a few days afterwards. I damaged my vocal cords and I, you know, I had no voice for a few days. Mm-hmm. But more than that, I was absolutely petrified to eat by myself, because I thought, oh my gosh, if I choke, there's no one here that's going to help save me. So how am I going, like, how will I live again if I choke while I'm eating? And it was very challenging working for myself at the time at home, where there was no one around during the day. So anytime I wanted to eat something, I'd make sure I went out into a busy spot like a park where there were other people. And I got over that fear quite quickly when I got my voice back and built up my confidence. But it was definitely a moment of fear, of realizing that if I was going to die, how did I want it to end? How did I want my life to end? I didn't want to be standing and fall down and smash my head. I didn't want to be found like lying in the back street of Rushcutters Bay. I honestly thought like, oh my gosh, people will say, how did she die? And they'll say, she died from swallowing a pom-pom. I mean, that is the most ridiculous way to go.
There's a little bit of humor to it.
Yeah, there is. And I just thought, I cannot let it end this way. So, yeah, that was my moment. And I also feel like I've just... there is a higher power. I'm not a very religious person, but I really believe that there's a higher power out there that determines our destiny. Mm-hmm. And it was not my time to go, because since then I've had another situation of, like, I wouldn't call it a near-death experience, but an opportunity to where I was saved by some, like, divine intervention. And yeah. I feel like there is someone out there that's just looking out for me. And this was just one of those moments that if I'd not seen those people, it was, you know, after 11 at night, it's quite quiet around that part of the streets, and there was no one there to help me. I could have, you know, either been dead or brain dead. So yeah. Who knows?
How has the experience shifted your perspective on your life?
Well, I guess I was quite young at the time. I'm now 34 and I was 23 then, and I was really at that exciting cusp of, like, building my career and starting my life independently. So I'd finished school, I'd finished uni, I'd just started my business, I had a vision for what I wanted it to become, and I'm a very big goal setter and very driven. So that only made me want to be more driven, given I had survived this experience. Yeah, like I mentioned before, I also feel that, you know, we're just puppets, and there's someone up there who's completely steering our destiny, and, you know, we try and intervene and control it. But I think that, you know, no matter what, there's someone out there. Thankfully, someone's out there looking after me a few times.
Yeah.
I don't run out of luck, but...
Exactly.
I didn't want the headline of
husband finds
newspapers around Wentworth Courage saying boyfriend finds girlfriend dead with a pom pom lodged in her throat. I didn't want that to happen either. So yeah.
In terms of the control part of it, do you feel that this situation has made you less wanting to control things when they're out of your control?
That's a good question. Look, there have been moments in my life where I've realized that you can try and control lots of things, and there's just things will play out the way that they're supposed to. Every single day there's something that you try and control. I've now got two children, and just in their birth experiences realize that it is all out of, like, it is, this sounds contradictory, but no one can have, you know, give birth other than the mother, so it's 100% up to them, but the elements of how that happens is all out of your control. So yes, it has taught me that you just need to let go and ride with it. And also I do this every single day with every single task in my life. I compartmentalize what the tasks are. So, yes, I have the end goal, and no matter what that is, but I look at the little steps that it takes to get there and try not to control the big picture, but the little steps along the way.
That's such valuable insight, because so often we forget to do that. I know for myself, sometimes I've caught myself and I'm like, what are you doing? Just, like, take the first step rather than trying to go right to the end. Because I think when we do that, we limit the possibilities, because half the time, you know, we can't see what's going to happen, and the thing coming around the corner could be much better than the thing we're trying to create for ourselves in that moment.
Yeah, absolutely right. And thankfully the person coming around the corner for me was someone that saved my life.
What was
and the... I don't even know what his name is.
Oh, really? I was going to say, what was the conversation? Like, obviously you were quite winded, short of breath maybe, and you mentioned you couldn't particularly talk, but did you have a conversation with the guy, or did they just leave you and...
It was all a bit of, I have to say, it was a bit of a blur, because at that point Danny was there, so I think he spoke to them a little bit. He spoke to them more than I did. I obviously couldn't speak because I had no voice, but they... later, when we got back into our apartment and we were settled and everything, we were sitting on our balcony and we were just talking about what had happened. And I'd never met these people before, but they they were ended up being my neighbors looking across the road from us.
Oh, wow.
At the same level, and they were also sitting on their balcony, and I can remember my husband shouting out, "Thanks for saving your life." And he was like, "No worries." And then he's a bit of a jokester. He said, "She doesn't normally lick her fur balls. She's not like a cat."
Yeah.
I can remember that, but yeah, no, I never saw them again.
All right. So I've got some signature questions to wrap off our interview.
All right.
So tell me, what moves you?
What moves me? So I split my life professionally and personally. Mm-hmm. In a professional context, I would say what moves me is seeing my staff thrive in their careers.
Mm-hmm.
And seeing my clients' businesses grow because of the publicity that we achieve for them. And I know that if it weren't for me and my business Polkadot PR, they would not have that success.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what moves me professionally. And what moves me personally is seeing my children. I mean, they're growing up now. I've got a 6-year-old and a 2-year-old, and just seeing the development of them every single day. There's new exciting things that they say or things that they do or achievements that they have that really like a dagger through my heart, just like totally crushes me, and I love it.
Oh, that's so sweet.
Yeah.
Yeah, children are so beautiful. Okay, tell me, what do you believe your greatest asset is?
I like to talk a lot, but I'm also very good at listening, and if I don't understand what someone is telling me, I ask a lot of questions, and I think that that's the journey that comes out in me.
Yeah.
And I think being curious and having the confidence to ask questions when you're expected to understand everything is a good quality.
Mm-hmm.
I work in a number of different industries with the clients that we work in, and I can't expect to know every single industry as intimately as they do. So,
sure.
A good quality is to just be curious.
And if you weren't in this particular career path, what would you like to attempt?
Well, I absolutely love the show Embarrassing Bodies.
Oh, yes.
Which a lot of people watch with their, you know, peeking through their fingers, but the more gruesome, the better for me.
All right.
And I reckon if I wasn't doing this, I'd probably be in the medical profession.
Oh, okay. Awesome.
I actually, when I was a kid, I was looking back on my school folders, and when I was 5 years old in kindergarten, I did a mood board of the people that I want to be and the work that I want to be in.
Mm-hmm.
And it was all these photos of Lisa Curry Kenny, who was this, you know, Lisa, she was married to Gary Sweet, but she was a, she did like an aerobics Oz style and exercise in her like Lycra outfits. And I wanted to be her, which I think is hilarious because that's so not me right now.
That's very funny. I quite like it. It's nice that you still have that so you can look back on it.
Yes, I've got it. Of course I do. Yeah.
Okay. And last question for you. What's the greatest piece of wisdom that you've been given?
Oh, this is difficult. Oh my gosh, I'm so stumped. I think that I get lots of pieces of wisdom in ways that people give me advice in a non wise kind of a way, if that makes sense. Like they don't say, "Hey, take this piece of advice forever for, you know, everything that you do in your life." So, I think what's important that, you know, my mentors have taught me,
mm-hmm.
Is to be sensible, be cautious, but go with your gut as well.
Mm-hmm.
So try and find a blend of those feelings that you get, whether it's a new business that you're working with, whether it's an investment, whether it's just a relationship that you build with someone. Utilize your intuition as strongly as you use your the facts.
Yeah.
And I do that because whenever if we're working with someone, or if I have any sort of professional relationship with anyone and personal, if there's something deep down that's telling me that this is not right, and I've been duped before, if I pursue any relationship with these people, you know, 9 times out of 10, I'm proven right. And this is just from the beginning.
Yeah.
So you can tell, and as I've had my business for 10 and a half years, I can tell how people behave in a professional context, whether they are legitimate, whether they're passionate, if they share the same passion as us, if they're committed to working with a PR agency, if their business and their vision has longevity. I'm able to use all of those skills to see if they're actually a brand or a person that we want to work with. So, yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah, it's so good. I think there needs to be more of that, you know, because sometimes we just take on clients or different projects and we ignore that gut feeling. And I think experience is the greatest teacher, because you soon come to realize that, no, maybe I should have trusted that gut instinct.
And you know what? We only ever want to work with decent people. And I know everyone probably thinks they're decent, but there's a way to behave in a professional context in a decent way. And the best campaigns are those where you work collaboratively with those, when you're all decent people.
Yeah.
So, and it makes our job easier. It makes my staff thrive. It makes the campaigns more successful. So we all need to get on the same page with what the objectives are with our clients and what we're going to get out of it. So that's a very important kind of checklist of what I go through with my potential clients.
Wonderful. Yeah. Well, thanks so much for taking the time to talk with us.
It's my pleasure. Thanks, Monica. Hopefully your listeners got something out of it, and hopefully they don't swallow pom-poms. And always, if I can leave with one lasting message,
sure.
Always have the cap on your Ventolin puffer and take it off just in case something creeps in from the top, and check it and then take a puff.
That's some very beautiful advice there.
Okay. Thanks, Monica.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye.